Mr. Hall, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Hall?
In Birtley, County Durham.
Which year was that?
1914, September.
What did your father do for a living?
My father at that time was in the army, but he was a sheet metal worker. Served his time in Birtley, CWS Tin Plate Works.
Was he a volunteer in the First World War?
He and all his family, for the fun of it, were in the Territorial Army. It was their way of getting an outdoor life and probably a holiday. So they were naturally mobilised immediately. War was breaking out.
I think that you said that your father changed his politics in the course of the First World War in 1916.
Yes, his family were all craftsmen, moulders, blacksmiths, pattern makers in the Birtley Ironworks, Colliery Ironworks, and they were a militant trade union and ILP family. My paternal grandmother was an ILP parish councillor, so he was an ILPer and a militant trade unionist. Militant in the old sense, not in the current use of the word militant. But after his experience in Flanders and being wounded, he rethought his position and was seeking and found people who were Marxists. This is pre-formation of the Communist Party. So from about 1916, he was a collector of ideas and books. And the house that I was eventually grew up in and was educated in had the books of Marx and Engels and Lenin, as published at that time, with the novels of Tressel, Upton Sinclair, Jack London's Iron Heel, Sue's History of the People, and the library of a working class seeker after knowledge.
Did he stay in the ILP?
He was in the ILP till the point where they decided not to affiliate to the Communist International, and then he helped to found a Birtley local of the Communist Party. And I remember the three people who came to the house to form this party, and there were three in 1920, and they'd only rose to about 12 by 1926, but they were all leading people. They were not rank and filers in the ordinary sense. There were lodge officials. My father had then become a Co-op insurance agent, and he could do his job in 2 or 3 days, and the rest of the week he was mainly concerned about ex-servicemen and their troubles, the unemployed and their troubles, and of course he had a great interest in the mining situation.
Who were the other two people?
There was a man called Jack Johnson who had a great influence on us as well as children, because he had been a member of the Socialist Labour Party, and he was a very well-read miner, coal miner. He set up a proletarian Sunday school in a hall, well, in the old Elizabethville. These were huts built for the Belgian workers in the Birtley Ordnance Factory in the First War. And this proletarian Sunday school, in spite of its sinister sounding name, taught us the songs of the Chartists, of Shelley, the poems of Shelley, the thought of William Morris, James Connolly, and of course people like Marx, Engels and Lenin. But we enjoyed it because we did lots of music and dancing. We weren't a grim Sunday school. The other person was a man called Billy Mee, also a miner.
M-double-E.
But the two men, Johnson and Mee, because of unemployment problems in the Durham coalfield, which, as you may know, was suffered from German reparations, and many pits didn't work from the end of the First War, they went to the Yorkshire coalfield. But Jack Johnson was an interesting person, and I met his grandsons recently. One is an executive member of the telecommunications trade union, and another one is a teacher in the Leeds area. And we met them. We met the teacher in Mozambique while I was teaching English in Mozambique.
Do you remember the general strike?
Yes, vividly. Because of this Elizabethville I mentioned earlier, and there were lots of buildings that weren't pulled down until the 30s. In fact, the school, Elizabethville School, I think existed up to quite recently. There were probably 1,000 policemen housed in the buildings of the old complex of Elizabethville, mainly Yorkshire policemen. So I remember them as a child of, in my 12th year, seeing platoons of policemen marching the streets, and I knew that my father was out at all hours on pickets, well, mainly not pickets, but blockades of the Great North Road to see that no transport went through. I also delivered for him copies of the Newcastle Workers' Chronicle, which was the paper of the Newcastle Council of Action. You'll find it is recorded in various articles that a special commissioner, Sir Kingsley Wood, had to come to the north. I'm now speaking from hindsight, but as a child I was impressed by the electric feeling of the general strike, which was all-powerful in the northeast because we were the home of heavy industry and mining. So there was no question of anyone breaking the strike. And the strike committee, I know, controlled the village, and it controlled the northeast.
What about students? Did you see student strike breakers?
No. The only thing I would hear about and knew about, because my mother was the treasurer of an organization that helped the Cramlington miners who were jailed for, at least a few were jailed, although it was the whole village, by all accounts, that turned out to derail an express, which might have been driven by students at the village of Cramlington in Northumberland. They were derailed there, and there was a court case, and a certain number went to prison, and money was collected to support the families, and I remember them coming out of prison, and it was a sort of cause of celebration in the area.
I think you were saying earlier that you saw warships off.
Well, no, I didn't see the warships, but in the Tyne there were naval ships at the time, and the local stories were that Sir Kingsley Wood didn't dare use the sailors for any public security because the possibility of disaffection, because many of the sailors of recruited into the Navy were from the north. I mean, were the Tyne, the Wear, the Tees were sea-going ports, and there were many seamen, both merchant and naval seamen, from that part.
Did you see personally any servicemen during the general strike?
No, I saw mainly policemen.
How did the policemen behave?
Well, I never saw any baton charges, but there were reports, and my parents and other visitors to the home would bring back stories of particular actions. And the one thing that I remember vividly was a funeral during the lockout. When the general strike was finished, there was the long miners' lockout, and a local miner was killed by a lorry carrying coal on which police were standing on the footboard of the lorry, driving them through a picket. And one miner was killed, and the funeral in Birtley was as big a turnout as a Durham miners' gala, which of course in the 26-27, in that period, was tremendous compared to a modern miner's gala where the number of pits are relatively few.
What kind of effects did the general strike have on the local Communist Party at Berkeley?
Well, the local Communist Party, during the general strike and during the lockout, had a tremendous support and were seen as the leading people in the locality. We did have a communist councillor, but he was a communist Labour councillor on the Chesley Street Rural District Council, of which Berkeley was one of the parishes and part of the Rural District Council. Alec Henry was his name, and he was also on the Board of Guardians. And while he spoke up for able-bodied young miners who were not given outdoor relief in that period, while he spoke up for them inside the Board of Guardians, my father and other communists would be leading mass demonstrations of miners demanding relief. And the Chesley Street Board of Guardians was actually surcharged for giving relief contrary to regulations.
Did the strike have an effect on the membership of the Communist Party?
The general strike would strengthen the Communist Party, but what the termination of the lockout and the return to work of the miners had a tremendous effect upon the Communist Party, because all the members were victimised, including my father, and it may seem strange, he was working for the Cooperative Insurance Society. And the reason why he was victimised was an indirect victimisation. Some of his premiums, very good premiums, were paid by local authorities, Labour local authorities, on their buildings and so forth. And they refused to pay them to him, because while the communists were seen as the left wing, the orthodox Labour councils, there was a split between the left and the majority at the end of the lockout. And I remember in the May Day of 1927, for the first time, because I used to go on all the May Day marches with my parents, we were kept out of the official demonstration. We were at the tail end, and we were not allowed a speaker on the May Day platform, and our speaker was outside Berkeley Park gates from our own platform. So there was the split. And the membership, Alec Henry left the party and one or two others, but the majority did not leave the party, but they went to other districts like Kent, the Kent Coalfield, the Yorkshire Coalfield. Some went to Lancashire, and I think one went to Australia. And the only person to remain in the party after the general strike, or rather after 1929, when we left Berkeley, my father was able to hold a certain number together till he left to get a job in London after being 3 years out of work. The only miner left was still out of work, I think, until the revival in the pre-Second World War days. And then he got a job.
Now, you've talked about the public support for the strike in your area, but did you also get people who opposed it, who said that it was pointless?
Not to my knowledge. After many, many weeks of the strike, I think only one person could be persuaded to go to a local pit. He was escorted, and I saw this, he was escorted to the pit by probably 100 policemen. He didn't do any work. He would only sit at bank top, as they would call it. But it was a psychological. It was an attempt to break the strike. But in Berkeley, apart from this one person, the strike was absolutely, the lockout period was absolutely solid.
But what about the general strike? Was public support 100% for that in your...
Oh, yes, because Berkeley, Jack Lawson was the Member of Parliament for Chesley Street, and I think his majority would be in the tens of thousands, 20 to 30,000 majority. even the shopkeepers and what we'd call the respectable Wesleyan Methodists would be at least neutral. The chapel of the miners, those who went to chapel, was the primitive Methodists. And my father's father, my paternal grandfather, was a rationalist, though his wife was a Methodist, a free thinker, my father's father.
What was there a mood of disillusion and lost morale when the general strike was defeated, from your own personal memory?
Well, the thing that affected me most and affected my contemporaries, I sat the 11 plus in 1926. My best friend was a miner's son, again on locked out. He and I always vied for the top position in the class, and in those days we leapfrogged up the school by ability. I was only spent about 1 year in the infant, in the three infant classes. I was pushed up the, and at 11 I'd finished more or less with the elementary school curriculum, and it was my head teacher, teachers expected me to go to grammar school. This friend of mine and I passed both. There was an entrance, there was a preliminary and a final written exam. We passed both of them, but we failed to be selected at the headmaster's selection. The headmaster of Chesley Street Grammar School took it unto himself to decide who came into the school. And with my contemporaries who went to the grammar school, in the main were the postmaster's sons, the milliner's daughter, the bank manager's son, and they in the main paid. They were not scholarship material. But we who were scholarship material didn't get into the school.
Why do you think that was?
Because the head was prejudiced against the unemployed, against miners. It was kind of social snobbery and prejudiced, certainly against a communist son. And so many of my contemporaries didn't get jobs. The people who went to grammar school took jobs, the most, what today we'd think as menial jobs, of shop assistants. And those who'd gone to elementary school in the main didn't get jobs. Many joined the army and the air force. This was an additional reason why we went to London, because there were no prospects. After failing to get into the grammar school, I was entered for an exam for a Northern Commercial College, and I was reputed to have got the highest marks in the north of England on a general knowledge paper, because I knew who Lenin and Mussolini and Hitler, and I knew a lot of political background general knowledge. I went on a scholarship to this school and did a year from 13 to 14 commercial subjects. And when I went to London, I found I could get a job very easily. I worked for a newspaper in London.
As what?
Just as a copy boy, as a boy. At 14 plus. We went to London in January 29. I would then be just into my 15th year, having had my 14th birthday in September previous.
Now, jumping ahead to the outbreak of the Second World War, can you tell me what your reaction was and the reaction of people round about you was when you heard Chamberlain make his famous announcement that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I was, to a large extent, incredulous. I had just had my first holiday abroad. I was in the affluent ranks of the manager of a bookshop at £4 a week, and I'd holidayed on the Normandy coast for a week in youth hostels, and then I spent a week in the Paris Youth Hostel, where I met many Jewish refugees from Czechoslovakia, Austria, Germany. And knowing intimately the Munich betrayal, because I was followed in my father's footsteps and followed his political views, though I developed them in my own right and through my own experience and study. So I was very doubtful at the outbreak of the war as to what Chamberlain had in mind, because I felt that Chamberlain's main purpose was to direct Hitler to the east. And I returned home to England overnight Friday, Saturday. The Friday, Hitler troops had marched into Poland. When I got back to London, to Victoria, on Saturday morning, the station was sandbagged. There was a whole air atmosphere of war in the air. And I heard Chamberlain on the Sunday morning. I was back in my flat on the Sunday morning, heard the radio, and then heard a siren, practically simultaneous. So I went out into the street to see what was going on. And a person with a tin hat on and with an armband, ART, told me to get back inside, which I ignored as a freeborn Englishman. And there was nothing. To me, it was psychological. It was just creating this atmosphere. So from that point until going to the army in June of 1940, I was very critical of the Chamberlain government.
But why were you incredulous about his declaration of war?
Because I didn't think it would be the wrong war for him. It would have been much better if Hitler had continued his invasion of Poland into Russia. But the pact made between Stalin and Hitler, I accepted as a necessary defense of Russia, a temporary defense, with hindsight, temporary defense. And I didn't realize, of course, that the phony war period would turn into a real war period. But I also was aware in this period, and I read the pamphlet, you may have seen it, of Major Hooper on the Finnish campaign. I was aware also that the French and the British were prepared to send manpower and materials to the Finnish front, which I then feared would turn into an alliance between Hitler, Germany and France against the Soviet Union.
Were you politically organised by then?
Oh yes, I'd been in the I was the secretary of the YCL, from Young Communist League, from 1930. In 1939 I was an active member of a group in the St Pancras local.
You mean you were national secretary of the Young Communists?
No, I was the local secretary, but I was on the national committee of the YCL at one time, and I was on the editorial board of the Young Worker, which is a predecessor of the Young Communist paper Challenge.
Now, in the Communist Party, at the beginning of the Second World War, there was a difference of opinion about
yes.
whether the war should be supported or not.
Yes.
Can you remember what your own attitude was, and what debates you may have been involved in at that time in the Communist Party?
Yes, I was involved in debates at local level. I was to have seen Ted Bramley, who was then the London District Secretary, on a Monday, but in the intervening period, the differences, which still existed, were settled in favour of what I will call the Dutt line as against the Pollitt line. And I was sympathetic to the Dutt line. And I had this view because of what I'd said earlier to you, because of my experiences in France, My experiences in the trade union movement, I was then an assistant secretary of the Metropolitan District Council of the Shop Assistants Union, which was at that time, in 39, quite a left-wing union. And I was also on the London Trades Council, which was a very significant body in 1939. And I found myself a little uneasy at the unity of all shades of opinion on the London Trades Council behind Chamberlain. So I maybe was a bit fundamentalist. I reread Lenin. I had been collecting Lenin myself and had the then collected works, which included his war writings and his writings from about 1914 to the Russian Revolution. The only other of the collected works, not the new version, but the old version, was the Iskra period. But I was an avid student of Lenin, and I felt that while it was not absolutely, the Second World War was different to the First World War, I felt at that point of time Chamberlain couldn't be trusted, and I was a bit doubtful about the war on two fronts. I changed my mind before Russia was involved in the war. I think I rethought my personal position when I was in the army and was in the position of standing to night and morning on the beaches of Portland Bill.
When was that?
That was in the so-called Battle of Britain period. I was mobilised in June of 1940, did my recruit training, was in the senior battalion of a training battalion. But on that day or night in September, a Saturday evening, I well recollect when on returning to barracks after being out for the day, we were told to put on our full battle gear, and we were marched out of the Vern, Portland, which was an old prison converted into a barracks. And we were marched to Church Ope Cove, Ope without an H. And we were at Church Ope Cove. I can't recollect exactly. It might have been 4 weeks, it might have been 6 weeks, it might have been 8 weeks. But it was in this period when we slept in our boots. I was in an old garden shed on the cliff bank, cliff top. And at dusk and dawn, our platoon took up that position, stood to, and in the intervening period of dusk to dawn, we did 2 hour spells on the beach or facing a mined area, barbed mined. And we'd had orders previous, each night we were given orders that we had to fight to the death if Hitler invaded. And as the Hitler armies occupied France, I felt then the position was completely different, and I was prepared to die